Hi everyone, and welcome to 4Panel, the Geek Show's dedicated comics, manga, and everything graphic literature-based podcast. My name is Rob, and today I'm joined by the absolutely stupendous... I forgot how to finish that word. I was going stupendous and then splendiferous suddenly popped in my head. I'm going stupendiferous. No, that's not a word. Stupendous, stupendous, that's the word. The absolutely stupendous Andrew.
I think that's a compliment.
Stupendous. You are stupendous.
Hooray.
It's a compliment. I did words.
Yes, yes, you did. Well done, Rob.
I also have no inner monologue. Anyway.
How many years have you been doing this, Rob?
I don't know. Anyway, we've got news today. We're going to dive straight in. So what have we got in the news?
Well, after that introduction, I think the best thing to do is start with the news that isn't about graphic literature at all.
Oh.
Or is at least, like, related to it. Because it's film news, we've got a trailer for Doctor Strange.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, basically, we see him. He's Doctor Stranging about. Gets in a bit of a car accident, has to go to Tibet, learn how to do magic.
Well, he has to go to hospital first before he goes to Tibet. Yeah. I think you're missing a step.
Yeah, really, there is, like... Well, he also, like, you know, goes to an airport, buys a plane ticket. Exactly. I don't need to explain the entire process.
Again, he has a car accident, then he goes to Tibet.
Yeah, just, like, crashes into a lake, kind of looks around and goes, well, may as well go to Tibet now.
Yeah, he half drowns and his hands don't work. Yeah. How's he going to use his credit card if his hands don't work?
So I think that's actually the entirety of Doctor Strange.
Is he just going to have it in his wallet? It's like contactless, so he's just going to be gyrating in front of the machine to try and get his wallet to connect.
So that it is Benedict Cumberbatch. I wouldn't put it past him.
That's why I said it. Oh, gyrating Benedict Cumberbatch. There's a new line of merchandise right there. And also a new line of Tumblr bit.
So now I'm just imagining like those robot pole dancers from Futurama. Where they've just, like, got the massive amount of gears that just spin round and round.
Oh. Sherlock was never the same again.
No.
You know that bit where he does his kind of, his, what's that film called? Minority Report. You know when he does that eyes closed and he's moving all the bits
about. Yeah.
And it's like ghetto Minority Report because he can't afford the special effects. That, you know, but can you imagine if he was doing that while he was gyrating? It suddenly stops being Minority Report and becomes some really weird dance.
And yet, still less weird than the Sherlock Christmas special.
This is true. Because that was just odd.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, Doctor Strange trailer. Bunch of magic stuff happens.
Yes.
What did you think of it, Rob?
Well, I'm not going to mention the other thing based on the music that we... discussed. I'm going to go with my first instinct, which was, oh my god, it's the Matrix.
It is very Matrixy.
It is so Matrixy. And you have Tilda Swinton being the Ancient One, and my god, seriously, people, you have Tilda Swinton who can play basically male, female roles. She can play any role. So why didn't you just make her into All Chinese Man?
Yes, that is. I'm disappointed by her lack of stick-on beard.
Yes, and mustache. You know, she needs the long, dangly mustaches.
Yeah.
She's supposed to be the Ancient One. You had the opportunity. You have the perfect, perfect actress to play the role of an ancient Chinese man with long, dangly mustaches. We demand long, dangly mustaches.
I mean, I'm slightly worried about her obsession with having Tilda Swinton be an old Chinese man. But she can pull it off, damn it.
If anyone can do it, I mean... Let's go through the list of Hollywood actors that we actually give a damn about. Benedict Cumberbatch, he's already in the movie, so he can't play the Ancient One.
Oh, can't he?
Samuel L. Jackson is a bit too sweary to play the Ancient One.
But again, that would be awesome.
The Ancient One going, what you talking about, fool?
So it is what a magic spell.
Yes. Exactly. Everyone from the Avengers is already in the Avengers. They
That's
can't
true.
Play the role. Who else do we actually give a damn about in Hollywood?
Mads Mikkelsen, who is the villain.
Mads Mikkelsen is the villain. He's already in. He can't play the Ancient One. Who else?
I kind of love Sean Bean to be the Ancient One.
Sean Bean.
Just staunchly refusing to die.
Yes. Sean Bean would actually Sean Bean might actually work. if the ancient one was from Yorkshire.
No, no. He's still an ancient Chinese man, just who inexplicably is white and speaks with a Yorkshire accent.
I was going to say. Benedict Cumberbatch's Stephen Strange just walks in and goes, I don't believe in these chakra things. And he's like, you're not from around here, are you? Oh, bye, Ekchuk. Anyway.
Of none of your fancy southern new age magic here.
Yes. What, you believe in Wiccan then? Oh.
Yeah, the trailer. It's very Inception-y as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I was waiting. I left that one for you.
Yeah.
I picked up the Matrix vibe. Andrew got the Inception vibe because the music is so Inception.
It was like, it's basically the Inception music set to a bunch of landscape weirdly shifting about.
Yeah, and I understand why they're doing the whole landscape weirdly shifting about, but Doctor Strange didn't ever do the landscape weirdly shifting about. He just basically went, astral form, into a different dimension. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, what were my Harvey hosts of Hogarth?
Yeah, exactly. The Crimson Bands of Sitarak, where are they? Because if used incorrectly, they can kill Galactus.
Exactly.
It's the truth. It was in Guardians of the Galaxy, the old Guardians of the Galaxy comic, that is. It's true, because at that point in the 25th century or whatever it is, Stephen Strange has become the Ancient One, and his successor, the one he's training to be the next Sorcerer Supreme.
Is that the one where it's like the Sorcerer Supreme is like a weird worm monster guy?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because Stephen Strange has become the Ancient One, and the Sorcerer Supreme is the weird worm monster guy, and his apprentice, or actually no, because he's dead at that point, I think, and the new apprentice to become the Sorcerer Supreme is that, is basically, he's an inhuman, and he's basically a cat man, which should be a massive hit with all of the anime and manga fans, but it wasn't, because it was ahead of its time. His name was Talon, I think. Because they had such great naming sense.
Yeah, I'm not going to cry for the lack of cat people in Marvel Comics.
Yeah, I know. But he used the Crimson Bands of Sitarak to try and stop Galactus eating a planet. And they kind of went out of control. And then the Ancient One turned up as this floating head hologram type thing. Started telling him off, cancelled the spell and said, apologize to Galactus now.
And then summoned a bunch of five teenagers with attitude to help him save the world.
Yes. Also known as the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, anyway, with this trailer, I feel like that is a big problem, the Inception thing, because it's meant to be this, wow, look at this fantastical, magical landscape. And just in the thinking, yep, looks like Inception. And I think it just doesn't have the effect they want.
No, it doesn't, because I mean, there was that whole bit with Tilda Swinton hitting Benedict Cumberbatch, and then his soul
pops out.
Oh
my god, the worst bit of the trailer, yes.
His soul pops out, and he's going backwards in slow motion, and his spirit form, his astral form is all kind of yellowy and jaundiced, and he's going, oh, what's happening? I'm in...
Yeah,
I'm
and he
in.
Just has the goofiest expression on his face.
Yes.
Just the, whoa?
It is
like,
literally
is this exactly that face?
It is literally that face. And I'm just thinking, hang on, so we've suddenly gone into astral form kung fu type thing. How is this master of mystic arts? He should be... He doesn't need to be in astral form to do any of this. He's the Sorcerer Supreme. He basically goes like this, like he's listening to too much rock music.
I don't know. I can kind of see, like, from a film perspective, magic kung fu probably looks a bit better than him just standing going, ah, devil horns, you're beating devil horns, I win.
It does look as though he's been to too many rock concerts, though, because he just basically does that all the time, and he just kind of, you're like, yeah, right on, brother.
Actually, now I just realised, because in the new comic series, he has an axe.
Does he?
He does.
Does he grind his axe?
I think you'll find he shreds it.
He shreds it as well, does he? Wow. Oh. So, yeah. Doctor Strange is officially the most magical rocker of all time. We proved it here first.
Yeah, anyway, Doctor Strange trailer. I think it's safe to say we're both a little bit underwhelmed by it.
I have a suspicion that what they've done with this is they've looked at it and they've gone, well, we have to try and Hollywoodize it in some way because it's Doctor Strange and it's all kind of wibbly stuff. Nobody really understands Doctor Strange. Not even Doctor Strange fans understand Doctor Strange, but that's why they're Doctor Strange fans. And I just feel that they've completely misunderstood the point of Doctor Strange in the first place, why he exists in the Marvel Universe, you know? Because he's kind of the mentor to a lot of characters in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, but to refer to them, like, this is his origin story. Like, they have to set him up first before he can become that.
I know, but...
Because this is a figure he has become after many years of continuity.
No, I understand that. I'm just saying that even with the origin story, though, they've kind of... Is it the Baron? Is it Mordo?
Baron Mordo.
Is Mads Mikkelsen playing Baron Mordo?
No, that's Chitwell Ejiofor. Mads Mikkelsen is someone...
He's playing Dormammu?
We don't know. I don't think it's like actually being confirmed who he is yet. I'm hoping not Dormammu.
It better not be Dormammu, because Dormammu does not... Well, he's got a fire head. His head's always on fire. You only get the vaguest sense of what he actually looks like because his head's on fire. Think more vague Ghost Rider head.
Yeah, but also I will say two important words. CGI budget.
I'm glad you said CGI budget and not budget CGI.
Right, Mads, we've run out of money. Here are some matches. You're playing Dormammu.
Yes. So, yeah.
So I'd just like to point out that Mads Mikkelsen is such an amazing actor. He would play the hell out of that role while his head burns.
Have you seen the furniture advert? The interior design adverts that he's in.
He's in an interior design advert.
Have you not seen it?
I haven't.
It's amazing. He's diving all over the place while these people are trying to rearrange the furniture. It's great. I was like, is that Mads Mikkelsen? It is Mads Mikkelsen. What the hell's going on? What? How does... What?
I'm going to have to watch this as soon as the show is finished.
Yes. Anyway, so, as you said, it's fair to say we're both a little bit underwhelmed.
And hey, speaking of underwhelming new film, we've got news that it's going to be another spin-off from Batman v Superman, and that is that Ben Affleck is going to direct and star in his own Batman solo film.
Really?
Yeah. Which is weird, because that's, like, actually fairly exciting news.
That is really good news.
Yeah.
Because I finally got around to seeing Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice. And I've got to say, Ben Affleck really is the best thing in that film. He's better than Gal Gadot, or whatever she's called. Is it Gal Gadot?
Yeah. Which, to be fair to her, like, she's in all of, 10 minutes of the film.
Yeah, I know. She does try and do the best she can, but I think that she would have been much better off in a separate film doing the Wonder Woman origin story. And Henry Cavill... He really is wooden in it. He really is like a plank of wood. Might as well just taken a plank of wood, put his face on it, and then just dressed it up as Superman and had it wander around.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've seen quite a few bits of it online, and like, there's a bit where basically there's like an explosion and a lot of bad stuff happens.
Yeah.
And then it just cuts to Henry Cavill looking vaguely bored.
Yeah. And that is literally the sentiment all the way through the film. He looks vaguely bored. When he's as Superman, when he's as Clark Kent, he kind of has some emotion, but even then it's really dumbed down. And it just feels like Zack Snyder is continuing on his reign of terror. After watching it, I honestly think, and I honestly believe, that Zack Snyder is being paid by Marvel. He's on Marvel's payroll. He's actually a sleeper agent for Marvel.
To deliberately sabotage DC's films.
Yes.
It makes so much sense.
And you look at Man of Steel. Have you seen the color-corrected version of Man of Steel?
I'm pretty sure I was the one like shared it with everyone else.
Yeah, I think you were. And it looks so much better.
Yeah, it looks so nice.
The thing is, just changing the color would make the film so much more enjoyable.
It's like, the point is, it's not even like color. That's the original color.
Yeah, they had to tone the color down.
Yeah. Which is just, it's insane.
Yes, it is. It's totally insane. I don't understand why you turn the colour down.
Like, I think one of my favourite comments I've seen about Batman v Superman is someone saying, I slipped my wrists halfway through the film just so I could see some colour.
Oh, ouch. Oh.
Yeah.
Batman v Superman. But Ben Affleck was superb. I mean, he's really come along in leaps and bounds. And when I saw him in Argo, I thought, he's really changed a lot since the early days, since Good Will Hunting and, you know, when he was doing all the other, you know, and Rounders and various other movies like that. He's really changed. Was he in Rounders? No, that was just Matt Damon. Since Good Will Hunting and, was it Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back or whatever it was he was in with Matt Damon for Kevin Smith.
Because I think his mother problem is he's just been in some really bad films.
Yeah, and since, was it Gigli?
That was like the low point.
Yeah, that was the low point. And since then, it seems like he's gone away and and also Daredevil. It seems like he's gone away. He's gone away and reassessed things, and he's come back. He's come out fighting because then he came out with Argo, and Argo was amazing.
Yeah, and he was in Gone Girl as well.
He was in Gone Girl, and he was great in that.
Yeah, he was fantastic in Gone Girl.
You know, and now it just seems like he's really matured as an actor, and he was so good as Bruce Wayne and as Batman. I'm like, well, we don't need everybody else. Just make this a Batman movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's another thing I've seen a lot of online I think's interesting, is the idea pretty much anyone can play Batman. You just have to be angry and shouty.
Yeah.
The real trick is being able to play Bruce Wayne as well, and that's what Ben Affleck can do.
Yes, absolutely. And I love the fact that instead of trying to do the growly voice, it's just like a simple voice changer type thing.
Yeah, see, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
It's like the Christian Bale, I'll drink a cup of gravel before I go out every night.
Where is she?
Where are the lozenges? Where are they?
Yes. And, yeah. But Christian Bale is a character actor. He's a method actor, you know. So we expect that kind of thing. I mean, look what he did to himself for The Machinist.
Yeah, that was above and beyond.
Yes. Just him and Daniel Day-Lewis. You just kind of go, you're a bit crazy, aren't you? No. This is for art.
Well, unless he has to portray a crazy person, then yes, he is crazy.
Yes. Yes, he is. Anyway, I think that I really want the new Batman movie to not be directed by Zack Snyder. I don't want him to have any kind of involvement
with it. Like I said, it's going to be directed by Ben Affleck.
Is he actually?
Yeah, I said he's directing and starring in it.
I missed that bit completely. Oh, then I'm happy.
That's why I'm like, I'm actually excited.
That's good. That's good. I'm sorry I missed that first bit.
Consummate professionalism, Rob.
Don't look at me with that look of disappointment. When you said Batman, I suddenly had flashbacks of Superman versus Batman or Batman versus Superman, and my brain went into a slight meltdown.
That's true. You have been scarred.
Yes. But Ben Affleck directing it is good. This is good news. This is good news, world. We're happy.
And hey, speaking of good news, killing it with the segues today. Brian Michael Bendis has unofficially confirmed that he's been working on a new Jessica Jones title.
Really?
Yes.
The Bomb's doing new Jessica Jones?
Indeed he is. It was at Marvel's Next Big Thing panel, Emerald City Comic Con. Basically, someone asked him if he's working on a sequel to Alias. And his exact quote is, even though there's an unofficial announcement, he just said yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Apparently it's going to be sometime after they're done with Civil War 2.
Fantastic. So is this the comic or TV series?
No, the comic.
The comic, right.
I mean, I assume there's going to be a second series of the Jessica Jones TV show.
Yeah.
But this is The Bomb. Kind of going back to the character. I mean, I'm pretty sure he created her.
I think he did. We will check.
I mean, if he didn't, he wrote the series, which pretty much defined who she is.
Yeah. Oh, God, yes. Yeah, he did. We're not going to go into that, because it's quite a horrible story for Jessica Jones' origin, isn't it?
Oh, God, yes. It's just really dark.
The whole thing with the Purple Man, and then what happens with the other heroes.
Yeah. Oof.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's going to be cool.
Yeah, it was created by The Bomb and artist Michael Gaydos.
And actually, apparently, he's hoping he can get Michael Gaydos back as well for the new series.
That'd be great.
Yeah, so fingers crossed for that.
Fantastic. Right, okay.
Yeah, we've got one final bit of news.
Ooh.
And that's something that, you know, Rob, I don't know if we've ever talked about this on the show before.
Oh, what's that?
DC's Rebirth, week 7,000.
We've never spoken about DC's Rebirth before, ever.
So we've got even more details on that, this time relating to some interesting stuff to do with all continuity.
Okay.
So first of all, on the cover to their big preview thing that they're going to putting out, got a picture of two hourglasses.
Yeah.
And in one hourglass is the Justice Society.
Okay.
And in the other is kind of the new 52 Justice League, so Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Flash, Green Lantern, and Cyborg, but done how they looked in the 1980s.
Really?
Yeah, so it seems to suggest that they're going to be working in a lot more of the pre-New 52 continuity. Which brings us to the really big point, is that they've announced the new Superman series, and the Superman in that isn't going to be New 52 Superman.
Not many people liked New 52 Superman.
No. It's why they deliberately, after their weird convergence thing,
yeah,
they're starting a new series set in sort of an alternate universe. It's basically, pre-New 52 Superman, he's still married to Lois Lane, and they've got a kid together, and that's the Superman that's going to actually become the Superman of the DC universe.
So going back to the old Superman.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Which is good, because I like old Superman.
Old Superman was good. I preferred old Superman to the current Superman.
Yeah, current Superman's just, he's too angry. He's not, the symbol of hope.
Well, I mean, didn't they do, Superman American Alien as well, which is dealing with, Clark Kent's teenagers or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was kind of an alternate type, timeline type thing.
Yeah, yeah, it was just out of continuity.
Yeah. And that was starting to go in some interesting places, but it just seemed like it's turning him into some kind of angry emo kid. And I was just like, yeah, okay. And the whole pairing with Wonder Woman, it's been done before. They have paired Wonder Woman and Superman together before. It's been done a couple of times in the past. I think it was in Silver Age the first time when they actually paired the two of them up.
Maybe. The main thing I know it from is Kingdom Come.
Yeah, there's been a couple of occasions where they've actually paired the two of them up. It's just been brief things. It's more like...
Yeah, I think it works with stuff like Kingdom Come, where it's after Lois Lane has died, they get together.
Yeah. Kingdom Come. I thought Kingdom Come was really interesting.
Oh, yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, it was really, really interesting. But I don't think it works with the Wonder Woman of now and the Superman of now. I don't think it really works in this kind of DC 52, New 52 universe, that whole relationship. I think what people wanted was a bit more stability because everything was changing. We've got all these new versions of these characters. So we want something that's kind of... I think DC might have done better if they hadn't messed around with Superman.
Well, plus I think it's that classic sitcom problem.
Yeah.
Where you introduce a character and their love interest, who's clearly the person they're going to end up with, but then they go off and date someone else, that relationship isn't going to last.
Yeah.
And you can't get invested in it.
Yeah. I agree with you on that one. It is that problem. If they had the gumption to actually stick with it and make it run its course so that he did end up with Diana all the way through, so they get married, have kids, have family, that sort of thing, and run it to the end, they had the gumption and the guts to actually do that, I'd applaud them for it.
Yeah, but it's only going to be a half measure.
Yeah.
Which is a term I use all the time now, thanks to Daredevil.
Yes, it's only a half measure. Anyway, right.
Just the other bit that I thought was interesting.
Oh, sorry.
Is, because I only mentioned briefly, is the fact that he's actually going to have a son in this.
Is he really?
Yeah, yeah, he's going to be a Jonathan Kent.
Ooh.
Yeah, which I think that is very interesting. Because it's not often you get to see these mainstream superheroes grow up and mature to that point.
Yeah. It is very, very rare, in fact. I'm trying to think of other superheroes who have actually gone... Well, aside from the Fantastic Four.
Yeah, but I feel like Fantastic Four could be an exception because they were always about being a family.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. If you put them off to one side, then Peter Parker, to a degree.
Yeah, until Joe Quesada flipped out and decided he was going to make a deal with the devil.
Yeah.
And I guess Batman technically has Damian Wayne, but...
He missed out on... Okay, Damian Wayne does not count, right? Here's the reason why. Bruce Wayne was not around when Damian Wayne was born. all during his first few years of life. So he missed out on all the nighttime crying, on all the baby changing, on all the pooey nappies, on all the wondering how something so smelly can come out of something so small. He missed out on all of those wonderful moments of being a father. He doesn't count.
I also like how Damian Wayne literally can't exist.
Exactly.
Like, in the New 52, Batman has been Batman for 5 years.
Yep.
But Damian Wayne is 10 years old.
Yep.
And how did you not think that through, DC?
The other thing, I mean, who's his mum?
Technically Talia al Ghul.
Yeah.
But it was all, like, only, genetic cloning, blah, 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 blah.
I was going to say, he could only have met Talia if he was Batman.
Yeah. Like, when, how, what, where?
He couldn't have met her at a swanky party, and she didn't know that. And if they met 10 years ago, she didn't know then that he was Batman.
Talia would, like, have no interest in Bruce Wayne. She's in love with Batman.
Exactly. Well, she is in love with Bruce Wayne, but Batman Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Which she considers to be the real Bruce Wayne. So, yeah. It just seems like the New 52 is an experiment that's failed.
Yeah, and I think DC are finally accepting that now and bringing back the stuff they like. Like, well, stuff that people like.
Yeah.
Hey, DC, speaking of things that people like, being New 52 Wally West.
Yes.
I'm never going to shut up about it.
Oh.
Give me my flashback.
Really?
Get it, flashback, because, like, he was the Flash in the past.
I know. I got it.
And I just thought it would be really clever and wanted to point it out.
Yes. I did find one piece of manga news.
Actual manga news?
Well, yeah, but also no. It is yes and also no. So
yeah, but no, but yeah, but no, but.
There are buts.
Oh, no. Oh, this is the bad kind of manga news.
We'll end the news section with this, because I can just run through this, provided I don't mangle my jaw trying to pronounce the names. Japanese readers have picked Shonen Jump's most erotic manga. You almost reached the Ryan level, but he's had more practice.
I know. I have. I'm disappointed.
Yeah. Anyway, Weekly Shonen Jump, there's a problem with the sexualization of all of the manga that are in Weekly Shonen Jump, and it's been brought to light. And so there was a Japanese survey site called Goo Ranking, and I don't mean that type of Goo.
Oh, no. Why? Why would you call it that?
I don't know. This is starts off as a great story, doesn't it? Anyway, they wondered which older titles defied the magazine's young demographics to get its readers hot and bothered. And they surveyed Shonen Jump readers to see which series they remembered most fondly for being a lot more sexualized than the norm. Because now it's pretty much the norm. But back when these series were coming out, it wasn't the norm.
Back before every Japanese schoolgirl started shoving balloons down their top.
Yep. So, starting off from number 20, these will be really quick, was Tsukiyate Yo Gogatsu-chan by Fumihiro Hayashizaki, which was from 1996 to 1998. Then Yarukya Night by Nonki Miyasu from 1984, and apparently that's still ongoing. Harenchi Gakuen by Gonagai from 1968 to 1972. Yeah, I know. Shadow Lady by Masakazu Katsura. Jungle no Oja Tachan by Masaya Tokuhiro from 1988 to 95. Kimagura Orange Road by Izumi Matsumoto from 84 to 87. Black Angels by Shinji Hiramatsu from 81 to 85. I mean, we're talking like really old titles.
Yeah. So can I just say how cathartic it is to be able to sit here and listen to you mangle these Japanese names?
Yes. Yes, I know. That's why I'm not letting you do them. I think I owe you that much.
Thank you.
Tende Shawaru Cupid by Yoshihiro Togashi from 89 to 90. Lilim Kiss by Mizuki Kawashita from 2001 to 2002. Cat's Eye by Tsukasa Hojo from 81 to 84. This is the actual manga title, so I'm allowed to say it.
Oh, this doesn't bode well.
It is called Bastard. That's literally the name of the manga. Yeah.
Just called Bastard.
Yeah, it's just called Bastard with a couple of exclamation marks, and it's by Kazushi Hagiwara from 85 to 91. DNA Squared by Masakazu Katsura from 93 to 94. And then we move into the interesting ones from number 6 onwards. To Love Ru Trouble by Saki Hasemi and Kentaro Yabuki from 2006 to 2009. And that really is one of the most sexualized manga, because if you have seen any images of it, you will immediately go, nope, nope, shut down the internet.
Revulsion but curiosity.
Magical Taro Ruto-kun by Tetsuya Agawa from 1888 to 1892. Jigoku Sensei Noob, or Hell Teacher Noob, by Sho Makura and
Noob.
By Sho Makura and Takeshi Okano from 1993 to 1999. Eyes, or I quotation mark S, by Masakazu Katsura from 1997 to 2000. Video Girl Eye by Masakazu Katsura from 1989 to 1991. If you notice, Masakazu Katsura has appeared twice in the top three.
I think I'm going to assume it's a he.
Yes.
He probably has a very particular style.
In fact, he appears three times in the top six or seven. Right. And the number one is one called Ichigo 100%, or Strawberry 100%, by Mizuki Kawashita. And all I can say about Strawberry 100% or Ichigo 100%, because Mizuki Kawashita appears, well, in this top 20, appears twice. Masakazu Katsura appears four times. Ichigo 100%. The guy in there, he basically falls in love with a girl who, he's on the school roof, and some girl jumps down from over the top of him, and he sees her underwear has strawberry print on it. Strawberries printed on it, and he apparently falls in love with her. He's forever trying to find that girl again.
Japan.
Yes, it was literally the entire premise of all Japan.
Shall we sadly shake our heads and take a break?
Yes, we may shake our fingers as well.
In a disapproving manner. Oh, Japan, you've been tutted by Rob.
TV. There's a lot of TV. Even the internet is TV these days. And if there's too much out there to know what to watch and what not to watch, well, tune in to the Geek Show Podcast Network's very own TV show, On The Box.
Hello and welcome back to 4Panel. Now we are going to be talking about what we've been read.
What we've been read?
Yeah, what we've been read. I do a grammar.
I like that I was bad with the intros.
Rob, make us speak.
Speaking.
What the worst part is?
Speaking into the tube, please.
What the worst part is, Rob?
What?
Didn't even realise until you said that. This is what a cold has done to me.
Oh.
I can't even English anymore.
Okay, right. We are into manga, comics, and various other bits. So, starting with me, and I've got Tsubasa World Chronicle Nirai Kanai. Volume 2 by Clamp. This is out from Kodansha Comics. So where we left this off, Shaoran and his mates have gone into the other side of Nirai Kanai, which is where all the dead go. And then Shaoran is seeing all this sweetness and light and beauty and everything like that, and everybody's happy and there's light everywhere. But everyone else is going, it's a scary place. Everyone's got their weapons drawn. And he's going, what the hell's going on? So they're continuing on with that. They're in Nirai Kanai, and they're in the world of the dead, and Shaoran is still going, I don't understand what's going on. I see all this flowers and trees and light. Everyone else sees only darkness, death, zombies, that sort of thing. So everyone's kind of fighting for their lives, while Shaoran is kind of going, la, 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 la. And that's basically how it goes. There's an interesting byplay in this between the so-called ninja and the so-called wizard. Because the so-called ninja and the so-called wizard don't get on, right? And they keep making these snide little comments to each other. It's like, oh, yeah, he thinks he's a ninja. He thinks he's noticed something. You're just the party mage. You know, you're just there to heal us. And there's an nice little...
I had a completely different image in my head when you said party mage.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
I use summon keg.
The ninja guy says to the wizard, you're just the party mage. And the party mage basically casts a really big spell and goes, I told you I was a wizard. Party mages can't do that. It's just this little bickering, ongoing thing between the two of them. Even though they're in a world of death and despair, or sweetness and light, as Shaoran sees it, because we're still not sure who's seeing the right world. Key thing, that. Because Shaoran, the wizard, gives Shaoran possession of the wizard's eyes. Basically, he can see what the wizard sees. And Shaoran's going, well, hang on, how do you see this and I don't? And then he realizes it's because he has returned after touching Yomi, which isn't a euphemism.
I don't know, after that list of manga we just heard.
I should stress that it's not a euphemism. And the interesting thing about that, it basically means that Shaoran has returned from the dead. And so what he's seeing is what the dead would see. But because they never died, because his companions have never been dead before, they see only darkness, death, and despair. Whereas Shaoran is seeing a little bit of both. Now, he's also not the real Shaoran as well, because the real Shaoran is trapped somewhere and sealed. So, basically what happens from then on is they keep going on their trek, and they meet this young woman who sees the sweetness and light of everything and is talking to Shaoran, and everyone else is going, it's a zombie, she's attacking. Shaoran's going, no, I want to talk to her. So he talks to her, and she wants to accompany him to this shining light in the distance that they have to go to. It's a bit like Journey. You know the video game Journey? Where you see the bright light at the top of the mountain and you have to make a journey towards it. It's a bit like that at the moment, but where Shaoran and this young woman are seeing beauty and light and sweetness and everything like that, Shaoran's companions and Mokuna are basically going, you want to go over there? That's like the deepest pit of despair over there. That's where all of this darkness is coming from. And so, yeah, they're on their journey, on their journey, on their journey. Meanwhile, Watanuki Kimihiro, who is like this dimensional mage, he's the one who's taken over the shop. He's always been the dimensional mage. It wasn't the witch who was in the Exholic manga series and anime series early on. That's basically a trick that Clamp pulled on everybody. Watanuki is basically the dimensional mage, but he's lost contact with Shaoran's group because Mokuna can talk to Mokuna regardless of what dimension they're in. So they're in a dimension where Mokuna can't connect with Mokuna. But what he's done already, the items that he gave to Shaoran in the previous volume are items that he knew Shaoran would need. And Watanuki, the reason why he was in kind of our world and met with the dimensional witch in our world and then thus became the owner of the shop, the reason why that happened was because Watanuki, when he came to our world, or the our world in the manga series, he lost his memories. He knew it was going to happen, and he had to come to our world, or the our world of this story. Anyway, he had to come to that world to pick up an item that he needed, that Shaoran needed, for the next stage in what Shaoran needed to do, which they've only hinted at again in this, because it's something completely different to what was going on in Tsubasa Reservoir Chronicle. It's all very complicated.
Yeah, like I completely lost what you were saying about halfway through. I've just been sitting here politely nodding my head.
Yep, nod and smile.
Yes, nod. Yes, Rob, nod. There
you are.
I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to take a nap.
There you are. You heard it here, folks. It's a skill for life. It's a highly transferable skill. And it may not guarantee you a job, but it will definitely improve your chances if you learn to nod and smile at the right moments.
I responded by nodding and smiling.
See? Would like an amazing show. We even give you advice on how to pass your job interview.
What other comics and manga show gives you important life advice as well?
Yeah. Anyway, they're attacked by a big bird, you know. There's a great little panel when they see this bird, because what it does, it shows you both versions of it.
Oh, I like that. It's a nice, like, double page spread of what each bite is. Yeah, that's really nicely done.
Yeah. And I thought that's really one of the interesting bits with this, because on one side, the bird looks sweetness and light and very, very, you know, it looks like some kind of divine thing. But on the other side, it looks like this demonic monster type thing that's coming to attack. And so, yeah, Shaoran gets injured. He is on the verge of death. And I don't know how that works when he's in the realm of death. How can you be on the verge of death?
Oh, no, he's going to become even deaderer.
Yeah. When he's already died once before and he's come back to life and now he's in the world of death and he's
maybe he has the same
again.
Super dying powers of New 52 Superman.
Oh, you mean Rory?
Yes.
We've established that New 52 Superman, or Superman just in general, is Rory from Doctor Who.
Just keeps dying.
Yep. They can't keep him down though. It's true.
Which, you say that, it would actually be a really like great series if it was about someone who's basically invulnerable.
Yeah.
but still manages to find a way to keep dying and coming back to life.
See, I think with Superman dying all the time, I think what they've done is take that old, is it adage or adage? I can't remember. I pronounced it adage since I was a kid, so.
I'm going to say adage because I'm middle class.
Okay. I'm going to say adage because I'm not. Take that old adage of you can't keep a good man down. I think they've just taken that a bit too far.
I think a lot of the manga on that most erotic list also take that idea a bit too far.
Yes, yes, they do. Anyway, Shaoran meets the guy who was at the doorway when they were going into the world of the dead. And that guy says to them, you have to find this Utaki place where the real Shaoran apparently is, and you already have everything you need. And he mentions Watanuki, not by name, but he says the dimensional wizard has given you everything you already need. He's very clever, and his foresight is like, you know, the best in the universe kind of thing. And then Shaoran wakes up and he's like, oh, right, apparently we already have everything we need. So they find that they have this teleport thing. They decide to use it and go to Utaki, which is like this giant tree floating thing. And then we find out what happens in the next volume. The art style continues to be very, very busy. Very busy. Really nice. Full of bishies. Full of bishonen, which is something that will really appeal to the female fans, and it's very, very clamp, so it does have that shoujo feel to it. It's a very shoujo feel to this series, which I can understand, but it's also got a lot of elements that will appeal to male readers as well. It's proper dyed-in-the-wool, sword and sorcery fantasy type thing. Tsubasa World Chronicle is absolutely that. It's got all the hallmarks of a typical kind of high fantasy. You know, you don't quite know what's going on. All you know is that you're going to sit there and enjoy the ride. And that's literally all you do with this. Don't examine it too much. Don't worry about when you don't understand what a specific thing means. Just sit back and enjoy the ride because it's starting to get interesting. And actually, I'm quite enjoying it.
Ah, cool.
So, Tsubasa World Chronicle, Nirai Kanai.
My turn.
Yes.
Okay, I have been reading Black Panther issue 1.
Ooh.
So this is the new series from Marvel, which is by Ta-Nehisi Coates with art by Brian Stelfreeze.
Is that really the name, Ta-Nehisi Coates?
Yeah.
It sounds like a clothing line.
Well, you say that.
Yes.
But apparently his name is Egyptian and it literally translates to Land of Black People. It's like Land of Black People Coats.
That's cruel, and I don't know what to say about it.
Yes, but no. What I think is interesting is Ta-Nehisi Coates. If you're a comic fan, his name probably sounds a bit unfamiliar.
Yeah.
And that's because he's not a comic writer. He's actually a journalist and writer who does a lot of stuff relating to, like, African-Americans and, you know, their social and political issues. So I think it's interesting he's kind of carried that idea over into a comic book now.
Yeah.
So this basically deals with Black Panther following Secret Wars. He's king of Wakanda again.
Yeah.
But all is not well. There is civil unrest. Basically, people are starting to demand they want a democracy, and they are willing to forcefully overthrow their king if needs be.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's basically kind of like a socio-political thriller type thing.
That's an interesting angle to go with, yeah, for Black Panther. And very different to the previous Black Panther ones.
Yeah, but I think it really works.
I can see.
Because Black Panther has always come across as being quite a mature character.
Yeah.
So I think having quite a mature plot line for him, it really pays off.
Well, not only that, Black Panther's very much a working king as well. He's very hands-on.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
It's like, I think it was literally life when we mentioned it, like that old idea of the king being at the front of the battle lines.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what Black Panther is.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I mean by a working king. He's somebody who is involved with the government, he's involved with the lawmaking, he's involved with placement of benefits and healthcare and various things like that.
And also punching aliens that invade Wakanda from time to time.
Exactly. You know, why can't we have a leader like that?
Yeah. David Cameron, why aren't you the avatar of the Panther God?
Yes.
Explain that.
I demand that he goes into the Houses of Parliament wearing a loincloth.
Yeah.
Who says the British are prudes?
What the long cloth and not like the skin type black onesie that Black Panther wears?
No, just the long cloth. Prime Minister's questions would be very different. The first question would be, why are you wearing a loincloth?
Yeah, it would be like the first question of every meeting.
Yes. And the second question would be, are you not called in that? So anyway, back to Black Panther. Let's leave that to
Black Panther. It's very interesting because it reads pretty much not like any other comic book on the market.
Okay.
Because obviously it's written by someone who's quite new to visual storytelling. Like, I certainly don't mean that in a bad way. He seems to have got a good grip on how to tell a story in sequential art. But it's just, it's kind of hard to explain to someone who hasn't read it.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I have no time to read it.
Yeah, how dare you, Rob? How dare you make me try and actually explain things?
I mean, you said it's more the thriller type thing. So how does it compare with, say, a normal thriller novel? I suppose that would be the easiest way to judge it.
Yeah, I would say it's probably a lot closer to that.
Yeah.
With sort of lots of brooding and introspection.
Okay.
But also occasionally Black Panther suiting up to punch some people, because that's how he does.
See, that's what makes a good thriller novel in the first place.
Like, John Le Carré, maybe you would be more successful if your characters dressed up like panthers and punched people.
Well, who was it who wrote The Bourne series?
Oh, Robert Ludlum.
Yeah, Robert Ludlum. He got it right.
Yeah. Jason Bourne sometimes knows it's time for Fist to do the talking.
Well, I mean, the very first Bourne movie, who thought Matt Damon could be action hero Matt Damon?
Yeah, God, it's weird to remember we used to live in that time.
Yeah, I know.
Where Matt Damon was a weird choice for an action hero.
And everyone was going, why'd you pick Matt Damon? And then there was that scene right at the beginning of, I think it was about, 15, 20 minutes in to the first Bourne movie where he's sleeping on the park bench and the cops come over. And then he's just kind of, he's just trying to avoid getting into trouble with them. And then all of a sudden it breaks out into sudden violence and then stops and everything's quiet again. Right. That was actually really good.
Yeah.
And it just sounds like this Black Panther is like that.
Yeah, it is a bit like that. But obviously with more emphasis on kind of this heavy lies the crown type thing.
Yeah.
Because Wakanda is in a very different state to like what it's traditionally been in. It's been hit by a lot of stuff over the years, like Namor threw a tidal wave at it and Thanos threw a Thanos at it.
Yeah.
And they're kind of just, it's very interesting to see like a place that was the world's leader in like literally everything.
Yeah.
Suddenly kind of put on the back bench a little bit and trying to rebuild up to what it was. And that's where a lot of this displeasure with the Black Panthers come from.
Yeah.
Because they basically see this as he's failed in his duty as the king. He was supposed to stop this type of stuff from happening. And that's why people are thinking, well, maybe we don't even want a king anymore.
Okay. Ungrateful, aren't they?
Yeah. Bloody peasants.
Yeah. Well, if they think they can do better, then they can go establish their own country. I'm siding with the Black Panther on this one.
Of course you're going to side with Black Panther. Black Panther's cool.
And not scary at all, and he won't turn up and beat me up. No, of course he won't. He's a king.
Exactly. He'll send someone else to beat you up.
Yeah.
Because he's got better things to do.
I was going to say he's got better things to do. He'll send one of his servants instead. Anyway. Right.
Anyway, I really like the art in this as well.
Yeah.
It's kind of, it's nicely detailed without being overcomplicated. Like, I think the best example of this is Black Panther's mask.
Yeah.
And like basically it sort of builds itself whenever he needs to go into Black Panther mode.
Yeah.
They've got these really nice scenes of kind of all these little bits of technology kind of growing up his face as it comes on. And it looks really nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, Black Panther, I would highly recommend it.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. So my turn again, is it?
Yeah, your turn again.
Right, moving on to quite the chunky manga volume this time. And this is volume one of Paradise Residence. And this
thick
is
chunky manga.
This is also out from Kodansha Comics. And this is actually quite an interesting series because it's by Kosuke Fujishima. And anyone who reads manga, has read manga for as long as I have, we'll probably have come across the name Kosuke Fujishima because they are also the author of one of the longest running romantic comedy series in manga, which was Oh My Goddess.
You mentioned that.
Yes. Anyway, this is a new series from Kosuke Fujishima, and it tells the story of Hatsune Takanashi. She's a girl of very, very simple tastes and also slightly simple mind as well. She likes curry and her friends and pudding. She likes pudding. You know, the kind of, it's like a creme brulee type thing.
I like this girl.
Yes. Anyway, she's very simple and very straightforward. And pudding is like her true love in life. If she had a boyfriend made of pudding, she'd be in heaven, right? So anyway, she's started her new high school life at Kika Academy. It's an all-girl boarding school, and it's set high on top of a mountain. And she meets new friends and eats some great food. And she's having all sorts of new and exciting experiences. But the house mother is basically a grade schooler, right? The landlady, the house mother, the dorm leader is basically a grade schooler. And she somehow manages to get a really strange rival who's obsessed with using fermented soybeans or natto as her weapon, because Hatsune can't stand fermented soybeans. She hates the smell and the taste of them. And there's all sorts of things. There's a foreign exchange student who doesn't seem to understand how clothes work in Japan for some reason. And there's all sorts of other things that happen. Now, this is very much like the four-panel comedy manga, you know, the gag manga that they have. And yeah. It's very, very short in chapters. The chapters are not long at all. Some of them are only like 2-3 pages, and some of them can be 16-17 pages. And it all very much depends on which chapter you're reading, because some of these are ridiculously short. But they're all kind of funny, and they all deal with Hatsune and her trials and tribulations, let's call it like that. But generally, it's aimed at the comedy type thing. Characters develop in a very sporadic way, because it doesn't really go into any of the, you know, any of their history that much. You do get flashes of things from their past and stuff like that. But the main thing is Hatsune, her love of pudding, her love of sleeping. There's one great bit in this where the whole thing is just about trying to wake Hatsune up in the morning. The entire chapter is just about that. And two of her friends turn up at her room, and she's got all these alarm clocks. The floor is covered in alarm clocks to try and wake her up, and it's not working. And one of her friends goes, I'll wake her up, because she's never woken her up before. And as she's getting closer, Hatsune turns over and a hand hits her friend in the face, right? And what ensues is this kind of fight scene without a fight scene. Hatsune isn't awake. This is kind of her auto-defense mechanism against waking up. And her friend is trying to wake her up, but Hatsune is basically, she's rolling onto her, you know, she's elbowing her in the stomach by accident and, you know, hitting her in the face with her hand. And I think there's a leg lock in there as well. And Hatsune is just doing this while she's asleep. And her friend is going, she must be awake to be doing this. There's no way she can be asleep. And the other friend, who's had this experience already, said, nope, she's definitely asleep. And one of the other girls from the dorm turns up and says, I know how to wake her up. Goes to the dorm mother, says, can I borrow these for a bit? Get some fermented soybeans onto a chopstick, into the mouth. And next thing you know, she's running for the bathroom. She goes, I'm going to throw up. So that whole thing, that chapter, the entire thing is just for that punchline. And that's what Paradise Residence is. It's very, very straightforward. It's very simple. The storyline is, I think, still in development. I think it's just basically establishing things. And I don't know if this is going to start expanding on some of the existing threads that it's laying down right now. And I'm kind of hoping it does, but I'm also kind of hoping it doesn't, because this is such an easy read. It's one of the easiest manga I've picked up in a long time to just sit down and read, because the chapters are so short and I can just go, I've enjoyed that. I've had a laugh. I'm going on to do something else now.
Yeah, but I think doing short gags can only get you so far.
Yes, and that's one of the reasons why I think it's an interesting idea, and I think it's an interesting move on the part of Kosuke Fujishima that this isn't a 4-comma manga volume. You know, the 4-panel gag manga. This isn't that. It goes into a lot more detail with some of them. And yes, there is fan service in this, but it's very, very minimal. You know, and there's some nice heartwarming moments as well. You know, there's some charming moments. There's various bits like that. But most of it is just Hatsune being an idiot. The Trials and Tribulations of a High School Idiot. That's what this should have been called. One of the good things about this, though, because this volume is kind of like a collected work, so they've got basically little recipe things in there, and they've got Fujishima sketches.
Oh, nice.
So it's like a little sketchbook type thing where it shows you some of the work that went into designing each of the pages. They've got some translation notes, and they've also got these color covers type thing. Really well done. They're all watercolor art depicting the characters, and I think it's some of the covers as well from the volumes that are coming up, or the volumes that are in this. I think there's two volumes in this. Is it? Yeah, maybe. Yeah, two volumes. I think it is. It's like 100 pages of extra content in this volume. It's really, really, really odd when you get right down to it, because it's not the kind of thing that you'd normally pick up, because you'd look at it and you think, oh, it's pink spine. It must be girly. And it is girly to a degree, but it's also one of those manga that if you're of an open mind and you're not too fussy, you just want to read something that's entertaining and enjoyable, then it'll appeal to everyone.
Well, I mean, Princess Jellyfish also had a bright pink spine.
Yes. And you love that.
Yeah, so I can't comment anymore.
Exactly. So, Paradise Residence, it's not as funny as Princess Jellyfish. I'll be honest, it isn't as funny as Princess Jellyfish, but it does have flashes of humour where it does really capture the comedy value of that particular scene. But it's more kind of a palate cleanser, you know. If you're reading something like something really complicated and high fantasy like Tsubasa World Chronicle, and you finish that volume and you want to go on to read something else, but you want something to kind of refresh your brain a little bit, just pick this up, read a couple of chapters of this. Put it down, you know, put a book back in where you are, put it down, go on to a different volume of manga, something equally complex and high fantasy maybe. Then you finish that, read a couple more chapters of this. And I think that's the best way to read this, to be honest.
Yeah, instead of all in just one chunk.
Yeah. I think take your time with it. You know, read it at your own pace. You don't need to finish this in one go. And it's...
Or should probably... I say, it's better to read it in bits than in one piece.
Oh, God. Why are you pointing at me after you made that horrible joke? Don't point at me. Anyway, yeah, I think it's better to read this at your own pace. And back to you.
Yay, back to me. So I've been reading another series from Marvel, Contest of Champions.
Okay.
So basically the premise for this is that after Secret Wars, there's sort of a new element in the universe, which is like one of the fundamental building blocks of the universe. It's called ISO 8.
Yeah.
And the Collector and the Grandmaster, two of the Elders of the Universe, they both want it, and they're competing against each other for it. And what they devised is of a game.
Yeah.
Where they summon a bunch of people, either from this reality or alternate realities, to the remnants of Battleworld from Secret Wars, and have them play some good old-fashioned death games.
Okay.
Because I do like me battles to the death. So basically, initially, what we've got... is that they each have a summoner who kind of builds the team. Collector has the Maestro, who's, you know, the old Hulk, which is actually the version from Secret Wars.
Okay.
It's like, he is somehow the only person who survived on Battleworld. He was kind of just living on the broken husk of it when the Collector found him. Versus one of my favourite characters who I think definitely needs to come back, Punisher 2099. Just like the cheesiest, over-the-top 90s-est Punisher there is.
Punisher 2099?
Yes!
Where did they dig that from?
Well, this is by Al Ewing, who does like his callbacks, like random, weird, old series.
No, that's what I mean. I thought Punisher 2099 was dead and buried.
Well, he's back now.
Oh, God. Did they have the cover from, like, the time when they blacked up Punisher?
And oh, then I went wish.
Because if they did that with
he's
it...
He's back.
Yes.
I could see them doing that. No, I just remember it's, like, one scene from Punisher 29 with, like, they're interrogating. And it's like, so, how old are you? It's like, 22. Caliber!
Yeah.
Oh, Punisher 2099. You're so dumb.
Yeah.
So, basically, we've had a very eclectic mix of champions who've been brought together to fight. So far in the series, we've had Moon Boy, Agent of Hydra, and Devil Hydrasaur.
Devil Hydrasaur.
Devil Hydrasaur.
Okay.
Iron Man and Gamora showed up for a little bit before they got returned back to Earth. We've had two Hulks, one who was Rick Jones, one who was Joe Fixit. The Sentry, Stick, Outlaw, the British Punisher, Ares, Madam Hydra.
Yeah.
Alternate version of Bullseye, who is Elektra. A Venom from a reality where he killed Spider-Man. Except now he wears, like, Spider-Man's costume as a cape and constantly talks to Peter in his head.
Okay.
And a new character called Guillotine, who is, like, there's, like, a French version of Black Knight. In that she's, like, you know, she runs around with a cursed sword, has to kill people, that sort of stuff. And one of the most recent characters brought back to life.
Yeah.
Night Thrasher.
Night Thrasher?
Yes.
Why Night Thrasher?
It's actually great because it's Night Thrasher, but written, like, with the full understanding of what a dumb idea Night Thrasher is, but then taken and made him, like, an absolute badass.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to have to read this.
Oh, my God. Badass Night Thrasher is the best. This was just beating people with his skateboard.
That's what I mean. My brain just can't process a badass Night Thrasher. It doesn't work.
Yeah, it was actually really well done because it was introduced at the end of one issue with the Maestro saying, now we've got someone on my team who, and I can't stress this enough, rides a skateboard into battle.
Yeah.
And then in the next issue, like, basically comes in, kicks his skateboard right into Bullseye's face.
Yeah, Night Thrasher was like the 90s teenage dream superhero.
It was one of those characters where it's like, the comics noticed a fad, made a character out of it, and then that fad immediately died.
Yep.
It's like we have, like, Dazzler and Vibe.
Yep. And they can never get rid of them.
No.
See, this is why I have always, since I was a kid, I've always wanted the people who make the comic books to just take a step back and just have another think about some of your ideas.
No. I think comic books should never have rethinks about their ideas. Because then you get great stuff like this where it's like a couple of decades later and someone brings back this obviously stupid character.
Yeah.
But then makes them cool because of how obviously stupid they are.
Do you know, with what you're saying about Night Thrasher, it just reminds me of Air Force, because the antimatter dude from Air Force, when he's fighting them in space, and he keeps commenting on the fact that Dazzler is a waste of space and eventually kills Dazzler.
But to be fair, the key difference there is that Dazzler is actually a waste of space.
And that's my point. She's a waste of space, but she thinks she's actually, you know, she's actually a powerful superhero. And the antimatter guy goes, you're just a bug. Just go away. Dead flick. And she's dead.
Yeah, no, I think Night Thrasher is actually like the opposite of that.
Okay.
Especially the whole thing is like how actually, you know, he's led his own team. He's, you know, he's pretty good at kung fu and a tactical planner. He's more than just some guy on a skateboard.
Yeah.
And he's, like, he's actually become like my favorite character in this.
Okay. I'm still not sure how this works. I'll have to read it myself.
Oh, you have to. But no, it's great. So basically it starts off with just quite a few issues of just them fighting.
Yeah.
Which, that is a lot of fun. Because, you know, it's basically like Battle Royale with superpowers.
Cool.
But then a couple of issues ago, the plot took more of a twist. Because basically it turns out that Stick and the Sentry have been working together.
Yeah.
Basically to create a portal to get everyone home. Only for then Maestro and the Punisher to turn out they're actually working together. Kill them, take all the ISO-8, and rebuild Battleworld with Maestro as its God King and Punisher as the judge, jury, and executioner.
Okay.
And then, like, basically, we get a flashback to reveal that initially all the elves of the universe were in this competition, and they are just basically a standard gladiatorial arena type thing.
Yeah.
So, where they each chose someone to do the fighting, just had a big free for all brawl, through which the Maester and the Punisher kind of met each other and decided, hold on, why don't we, like, work our way out of this? And basically, they proposed this competition, you know, basically to the Grandmasters, like, well, you like your games, why don't we do this instead? Mm. And he fell hook, line, and sinker for it.
Wow. That's a hell of a fall.
Yeah. But yeah, just kind of, it's really weird because they made this comic as basically a way to tie into, like, a mobile fighting game they have. So when it first came out, I was really apprehensive, but I gave it a shot because I do like Hal Ewing.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's such good fun.
I can understand why it's turning out to be such good fun, because with that mobile fighting game, you can basically pick characters against other characters and some combinations that you might not think of. So basically doing the comic book version of that, but actually having the entire roster of Marvel.
Yeah, exactly. It's taking that idea of just any weird random character you want,
yeah,
throwing them together with another completely random character and just seeing what happens.
Yeah. Can you imagine if you had like Namor and a bunch of other people who were really good in the sea, but not very good anywhere else, against people who are not very good on the sea, but are excellent everywhere else?
It's like the living embodiment of the shark bear.
Yeah, isn't it?
Because you think like fusing a shark and a bear would be great,
but it's not.
But then you have something that can't swim or survive on land.
Oh, no, no. The worst one I've seen is the whale wolf.
Whale wolf?
Yeah, it's basically a wolf and a whale, a giant whale and a giant wolf combined. And it looks horrible and it doesn't work. And I'm just kind of going, no.
Because it's a whale wolf.
Yeah. It was something versus whale wolf. I can't remember what it was called, but it was pretty bad. Anyway, any more for you?
No, I think that's pretty much it for me.
Well, I can do one more.
Ooh.
Mockingbird Volume 2, or Issue 2, sorry.
Oh, yes, because yeah, like you literally just read this.
Yes, Mockingbird Issue 2. And I feel that I have a duty to talk about this one. I feel that it is my solemn duty as a comic book reader to talk about this one, because I'm not sure who this issue of Mockingbird is aimed at. Really not sure, because the cover doesn't really sell it. It does, but it doesn't. The cover is basically you have Mockingbird wearing what looks to be, you know, she's wearing like thigh-high leather boots and a leather coat and leather hot pants and fishnets, and there's corgis all over the place, and she's holding what looks like a riding crop of some sort. And there's a guy in like a gimp outfit and another guy, butler guy with drinks and the, you know, the mask, and some woman in the background with the floating head thing, and I don't know why they do the floating head thing.
Well, Black Widow did say she liked Mockingbird's boots, so
yes,
maybe that's who the target audience is.
Actually, I've just realised the place where she is, that thing in the background, is Buckingham Palace.
Oh my God, it is Buckingham Palace.
Yeah, and you'll understand, because if you remember the previous issue of Mockingbird, I said at the end of it there was all these dudes in white and everything like that. This Mockingbird jumps around in time a lot, and that continues on with this one. This one is set 1 month ago, minus 5 days.
Ah, so this is like the events that led her being in the hospital waiting room wearing that outfit.
Yes. Anyway.
And with a corgi.
And it starts off with Mockingbird talking about, she's having this inner monologue about why she never joined a sorority, and she's actually at a Hellfire Club meeting, and it's a Hellfire Club meeting where Lance Hunter is there, and he's kind of infiltrated, and he has infiltrated to try and save the Queen of England, right? That's his mission. But Mockingbird has infiltrated in order to try and save him. And so she's wearing her vaguely S&M outfit with the spiked shoulder pads and the leather boots and everything like that. And Lance Hunter is, how do I explain his outfit? He's wearing these leather shoulder straps and a leather collar and leather shorts, tight leather shorts. And he's chained to what looks to be a hat stand.
Also, can I just ask, is this traditional Lance Hunter or more like TV show based Lance Hunter?
I think this is a little from Column A, a little from Column
B. Because I'm pretty sure Column A Lance Hunter is like in his 50s.
Yeah. This is definitely TV show then, Lance Hunter, who is about the same age as Mockingbird.
Okay, that is slightly less horrifying then.
Yeah. So anyway, he's saying, do I get a safe word? And then they electrocute him and say, you kneel before the Black Queen type thing, or kneel before Zod type thing. And so basically it's an S&M party in order for Lance to get his membership to the Hellfire Club approved.
Right.
I don't understand why. So anyway, the Black Queen is there, you got a horse head guy there, you got everybody dressed in various S&M outfits and masks and things like that. Bobby says, you know, I'm here to rescue you. And then it goes on to this, it shows you like the tally of Lance rescuing Bobby versus Bobby rescuing Lance. And she's way, way, way out in front. which I thought was a nice little aside. And she manages to rescue him. And then they go on to, they have to kick a door down. And this is one of the best bits I've seen in a comic book, because this version of Mockingbird has got all these nice little interesting asides that are really quite fun. Lance says, I'm going to kick the door down. And Bobby says to him, kick just below the doorknob. That's weakest there. And Lance goes, I know that. And he kicks the door. And then it goes on to this panel where it actually says the correct way to kick a door open. And the last one is wear shoes. And then just goes to the next panel with Lance holding his foot going, ow. And Bobby going, I did try to tell you. Which I thought was great. Beautiful little aside. Anyway, they walk into a trap. The Black Queen's there with all her gimps. And they're all wearing hard hats because they're underground, which I thought was a really nice touch.
I love that.
It's just brilliant. The fact that all the gimps are wearing hard hats with lanterns on.
Just because it's an S&M club doesn't mean they don't take proper safety precautions.
Exactly. And Lance didn't even get a safe word. It's just the best, though, because they're all wearing hard hats and they're all in gimp suits. And I'm just like, there's something really idiosyncratic about this image, and I love the fact that it's like that. Anyway, they get chained up again. The Black Queen obviously doesn't recognize Mockingbird as Mockingbird because she's not wearing her usual Mockingbird outfit. And so, you know, thinks that Lance is the one behind all this, and they're going to execute them, but then one of the gimps starts saying, if we stay any longer, you'll have to pay overtime. She's like, okay, right, kill them first thing in the morning then. Like, it's the best, you know. It's just kind of, okay. And so it moves on. They manage to escape by the simple fact that Lance has not taken the electrocution collar off for some reason, and not sure why. So anyway, he insults the Black Queen, she electrocutes him, but there's water everywhere in this underground place. So he's got his foot in the water. So when he gets electrocuted, travels through to all the gimps who get electrocuted as well. They're all feeling a bit ill. Capture the Black Queen, and they basically go through these tunnels that are really badly signposted. One of them just has this wooden piece of wood. A wooden plaque on the wall, really old, and just someone's written on it, Buckingham Palace, and an arrow pointing that way. And then they come to another side where they have to decide which way to go. The Black Queen tries to attack Mockingbird, and because she's got that ping pong ball from the previous issue.
Oh, yeah.
And that somehow protects her from the Black Queen's psychic blades. And that's one of the interesting bits about this, is that it hints again at changes with Mockingbird that we are not quite sure about, because it makes a point right at the front to basically highlight the fact that she's had the super soldier serum and the infinity formula, and they're doing all sorts of weird and wacky stuff to her. But leaving that to one side, they appear with a corgi. A corgi immediately starts licking Bobby's face, and the Queen goes, you know, just kind of standing there, shrugging her shoulders, going, more people coming up from the floor. Because it's the Queen, and she would see that and just go, damn, Philip, there's more of them. Oh, maybe not that.
Because she's the Queen and she ain't got no time for this jibber-jabber.
Yes. Philip, get my rifle. There's more of these pesky gophers coming up through the floor.
Another series I would read. Action Queen.
Yes. If it was like Action Jackson, where you had just Philip as the random old guy wandering around going, yabba-dabba-doo.
So that's not exactly something Prince Philip would do.
I know. No, he'd say it in a really posh accent, and he'd only see it when he sees a pretty lady. He'd walk around and go, yabba dabba doo.
He's made it seedy now. I'm not sure I like it.
British Prince Philip.
It's true. I think that's like whimsically seedy.
Yes. Anyway, it ends with Bobby and Lanson, because they apparently share an apartment, and they have an on and off again thing. And they're sitting there, and she handcuffs him to the bed at the end. And then she gets called to go to the hospital while she's still wearing the S&M outfit type thing, which is where the nice boots bit comes in. So she goes to the hospital and leaves Lance handcuffed to the bed. So what I think is happening right now is that, you know, all those different costumes leading up to...
Yeah, these are all going to be various storylines it's going to go into.
Yeah, it's going to go through those different costumes and what the story behind those different costumes, leading up to the final bit, which is where she says, you know, I'm sick and they're trying to cure me.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm definitely very interested in...
The thing is, it's a very interesting way of approaching the storyline by introducing it first and having it jump around in time right at the beginning and using the costumes to kind of highlight different storylines in the life of Mockingbird through the course of maybe that 1 month, because this is 1 month minus 5 days. So if you take each of those weeks into account up to the final week, it's a very interesting approach and building the story up week by week through that.
Yeah, I mean, this is something turning into a much more interesting thing than I thought a Mockingbird series would be.
It's beautifully tongue-in-cheek, I think.
Yeah, and it's all kinds of bizarre.
Yes.
So just flicking back through the first issue, I really hope we get to find out the story behind why Mockingbird is in a leotard fighting a lizard circus man.
Yes, that one I am looking forward to. But just, one of the most beautiful scenes is still just Mockingbird and Lance opening the door. You know, oh, Lance having kicked the door open, you know. And then just all of these gimps wearing hard hats with lappens on.
That's just an amazing image.
It's just the best. Anyway, right, so that was Mockingbird issue 2. I had to talk about it. It was my duty.
You did, but I think that's probably more than enough for us from today.
Yes, that is more than enough for us. We're going to go back into the basement where we belong.
Back into the special basement.
Yes, the special basement. So, if you have enjoyed the show and you would like to support us, we do have a GoFundMe campaign going on at the moment. We are trying to raise funds to replace essential equipment and reinforce the infrastructure, because the Geek Show Podcast Network is a voluntary organization. So if you can, please show your support by making a donation to our campaign. You can find all of our shows on Mixcloud and very, very soon iTunes, Stitcher, various other places. We're also on the YouTube, so look out for us on those. And if you want to get in touch with us, you can do so studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. We're also available on Facebook, Twitter, and MyAnimeList, Google Plus, and various other places on the internet. So do look out for us. That's it. I've been Rob.
And I've been Andrew.
We'll see you all next week with more comic and manga goodness. But until then, goodbye.
Thanks for listening.